This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Julian Ng and Ibrahim Sani. It's now 7:38 on Tuesday, the 13th of September. Coming up in the next half an hour, we have news of a merger that will create a mega farming retailer. And also, we're going to be analysing EPF's second quarter results from last Friday. But first, news on Samsung's Galaxy Note 7. Is that what everyone's talking about? Samsung Electronics stock price yesterday plunged. It suffered its biggest one-day price decline in 28 years that it's been a public company. And this came after the U.S. Consumer Protection Watchdog issued a warning to consumers telling owners not to use the Note 7. And I guess since then, Samsung has been trying to respond to this. They've responded, I guess, as well as the company could in terms of a mass product recall. But just how badly has their brand been affected?
I think very badly. You have about $1 billion wiped off the market capitalization. And of course, this will add to all those concerns we have about products we buy. You know, what more with products coming out of China, the car emission failures, the Takata brick scandal, mm-hmm. and not to mention all the oil spills and the Brazil mining disaster. I think this is the problem when corporations start selling aspirations, right? Everyone wants to jump on that bandwagon to own that nice, shiny phone, and this phone can explode in your face.
I wonder if their competitors can actually, capitalized on this, because Huawei, Oppo, Xiaomi, all these are Android-based phones, and all of them are planning to either launch a new phone or is launching a new phone. And of course, we saw the Apple iPhone 7 that was launched last week. I don't know whether these kind of makers can actually capitalize on the fact that Samsung is actually in trouble right now because of their Note 7.
What can a company do? I mean, if they're faced with this, right? So I've been reading reports about this, and Samsung, apparently their response to these burning phones has been a textbook case of how to handle mass product recalls. I mean, all they can do is be swift and decisive about the way to issue warnings and say, okay, we're going to recall this product. But apart from that, what else can they do?
My question is, why make faulty products, right?
So you're arguing that perhaps they were too quick to launch this without discovering all the
Why in a hurry to make products out there that can kill people? I think killing people is against the law. So you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. So the thing with these crisis management is, in my opinion, honesty, right? The more honest the company is, the better the company can actually navigate through this crisis management process. But of course, at the same time, somebody has to take the cull, right? And I think this is where the Samsung board or Samsung management has to come in strong and track down the individual or the individuals that actually said go to this product to the market.
Okay, so accountability has a lot to do with it.
Essentially,
well, they've appointed the 48-year-old son of Samsung's founder, Jay Lee is his name. And so it appears that he's the heir apparent to the whole Samsung group, which of course doesn't only produce handphones, but a lot of other things like chips. You know, they are one of the biggest chip sellers to, believe it or not, their rival Apple. That question about market share, I think, yes, the rivals have a chance to come in and occupy some of this lost market share, because you look at the brands like Huawei, over the year, they have expanded market share from 5% to 8%. That's huge. Oppo, for instance, has expanded the market share from 2% last year to about 5% in the latest quarter. And Xiaomi, still there, being threatening at about 4% market share. So all these other smaller companies are catching up on the big guys who sell their phones very expensively, mm-hmm. and now apparently unsafely.
7:42 right now. Two Canadian companies, Adrium and Potash Corp, they say they want to merge. And what this means is that this could create the world's largest crop nutrient company worth some $36 billion. And what it could likely do is also trigger U.S. regulatory scrutiny, because Potash Corp is the world's biggest crop nutrient company by capacity, and Adrium is North America's largest farm retailer. As I'm saying that, it sounds like Adrian to my
Adrium, like how to make you live longer.
Yes, right? Exactly. So these two companies, despite being Canadian, they're listed in the US, and US regulatory officials are worried that this could be antitrust.
I think this is about feeding the world, because our population has, I think 7 billion is the latest count. So this is about food security and food innovation. We saw that announcement of Bayer trying to take over Monsanto, right? Mm. That's also partly to do with food as well. Whereas this merger will create a company that's very dominant in North America. They will control about 2/3 of the potash capacity, which is really important for food production.
What is potash?
It's a kind of potassium chloride.
Yeah, so it's commonly referred to as muriate or potash or MOP, and it's commonly used as a source for potassium, and you use it for agriculture. And 95% of all potash fertilizers are actually used worldwide. So what I'm trying to say is that this is something that everyone has to use. And for a company like, the world's largest fertilizer by capacity, i.e. Potash Corporation by Saskatchewan, you have to realize that there is some element of truth in terms of the antitrust here. So how would the world react, right, when all your source of potash comes from just one company? Does that company have the right to actually dictate the price that is at the market? Does the company have the right to dictate what goes into it? What is the recourse of
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. I mean, this will... not only food production, but everything else, right, is just governed by a few major companies. Even in retail foods, the stuff, the Kit Kat that you buy, the Milo that you buy, controlled by very few companies, the Coke that is out there. So this is really, together with Monsanto, Bayer, and now these guys, they are really major controllers of food production in the world. And in the United States, agriculture and agricultural-related industries contribute about $835 billion to U.S. GDP.
Wow, that's about 5%, isn't it, of the U.S. GDP?
Yeah, but this is the trend, right? I mean, like Bayer and Monsanto, they're going to be creating a $65 billion company. ChemChina and Syngenta, actually, they're going to be building a $43 billion company. Is this the trend where we have multi-billion dollar companies covering our food?
The question is, do they need to merge? Do they need to merge, right? They argue that they do for economies of scale, for... acquiring technology to eke out that extra little bit of growth in a slow growth environment. And I guess we may be seeing more and more of these proposed mergers. It's a question of whether regulators can stop these mergers if they are, in fact, breaching trust, antitrust. Okay, guys, 7:46 right now. We'll be back with more local business stories after this. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.